Well, good morning. My name is Terry Branstad, and I have the honor of serving the people of Iowa as governor. On August 15th of 2013, I and the lieutenant governor had the honor of welcoming the new EPA administrator, Gina McCarthy, to the Iowa State Fair to discuss with her the importance of renewable fuel and the renewable fuel standard known as the RFS. That day, the price of corn was $6. This was August of 2013. It has now fallen to, as of yesterday in southwest Iowa, $3.45 a bushel, well below the cost of production. And farmland values have started to drop as a result as well. We are the leading corn-producing state. We saw land values drop 15% last year, and they're continuing to decline. USDA estimates that farm income will decline 32% this year. Since 2013, I have participated in numerous meetings focused on the importance of a robust renewable fuel standard for a healthy economy here in rural America, in the heartland of this country. For example, in January 2014, Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds, Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Bill Northey, who's here with us today, and I and all the members of our congressional delegation hosted interested citizens and all from people all across the Midwest, Republicans and Democrats, for a hearing in the heartland. During that hearing, which was held in Des Moines, we had 83 individuals testify in support of a robust renewable fuel standard, and only two testified in favor of scaling back the RFS. I had hoped to welcome you all to Iowa for today's hearing, but I do appreciate the fact that you did choose a Midwestern location, and we are pleased to be here and get outside the Beltway, where Big Oil's army of well-paid lobbyists seem to have so much undue influence. I've been... At least we don't have paid kids riding bicycles around here spewing out misinformation as we had in the Virginia hearing. I've been a relentless supporter of biofuels since the 1970s when I served in the Iowa legislature when we used to call it gasohol. It's truly incredible to see what this industry has done and how it's grown and the impact it's had and the diverse benefits it's provided to farmers in the Midwest, to rural communities, and to workers. With a state that has 92,000 farmers, dozens of thriving international agribusiness companies, and a large variety of bioscience leaders, it's easy to see that growth is a result of the hard work and innovation of our farmers and the technology advancements that we've seen with the use of corn and soybeans and other biomass products. It's really been incredible to see this happen. There are many benefits that flow from the renewable fuel standard and the use of biofuels, including diversifying our nation's energy portfolio and reducing our dependency on overseas oil, reducing transportation fuel emissions, giving consumers choice at the pump, and helping grow family incomes in rural America. In fact, biofuels have enabled value-added opportunities for a variety of biostocks, including corn stalks, soybeans, and woody biomass. And renewable fuels have created high-paying jobs and rewarding careers in rural America. In the current RFS proposal, I recognize that the EPA has made some changes. For example, there are some encouraging changes involving the volumes for biodiesel. Unfortunately, on the ethanol front, the agency seems to have bought Big Oil's faulty arguments hook, line, and sinker. Big Oil has polluted the discourse with half-truths and a narrative that rewards their bad behavior by blocking market access to renewables. Can you imagine the people on the East Coast and the West Coast if they had the opportunity to buy fuel for $1.99.9 as we did on the way down here with our flexible fuel vehicle. By the way, I was the governor that said the state of Iowa was going to have a fleet of E85 vehicles, and I'm proud we've had that since the early 90s. The gas price at that same station was $2.95, and we bought E85 for $1.99. You know what they're paying for gas in the East Coast and the West Coast? I used to talk to my uncle all the time that lived in California. A lot of times it's $3.50, $4 a gallon. And can you imagine if they had the kind of opportunity and access that we have? But big oil has blocked that. The EPA's indecision for the last 2 years has led to market uncertainty, and it's hurt farmers, frozen investment in new generation technology. My hope is that the EPA is open to improving the proposal much further and meeting the original congressional intent of significantly expanding the use of biofuels throughout the entire country, not just here in the heartland of America. The EPA has a choice. Protect the deep pockets of big oil, or big oil and their monopolistic practices. And by God, they don't want to lose any more than 10% of the market, which they've already lost. Or they can nurture consumer choice, renewable energy growth, and a healthy rural economy. Unless you advance the robust renewable fuel standard, you will constrain the growth of this rural economy, which, by the way, since RFS passed, grew dramatically until 2013, and now has slowed down significantly. Obviously, this has a big impact on our family farms, our agribusinesses, and the biofuel industries that serve them. The citizens and the businesses are a very important part of our rural fabric, and it's been part of the economic revitalization that we've experienced in the last decade. The proposed rule by the EPA would have a direct negative impact on our 42 Iowa ethanol plants, our 13 biodiesel plants, and scores of other facilities throughout these other Midwestern states. It's estimated the single EPA proposal would cost thousands of jobs nationally. That's thousands of families that would face undue financial hardship and stress. The EPA's indecision and proposed rules have negatively impacted land prices, farm machinery manufacturers, and rippled through America. Just yesterday, Kinsey Manufacturing, that makes corn planters and grain carts, announced they're going to lay off 215 people. John Deere has already announced they're laying off people. I was governor during the farm crisis of the 1980s, which brought incredible hardship. We closed 38 banks, land values dropped 63%, and I don't want to see a repeat of that disaster. After decades of efforts to reduce dependency on foreign oil, giving consumers choices at the pump, and increasing family income, the EPA's revised proposal would halt this great progress and success that we have seen. I find it ironic that big oil often attacks renewable fuels on environmental grounds through misinformation and half-truths. This from the same industry that was responsible for the MTBE debacle that poisoned groundwater on the East Coast and the West Coast, the 1989 Exxon Valdez, and the 2010 Deepwater Horizon oil spills. I hope that the EPA will use some good, what we would say, Midwest common sense, and continue the progress that's been made since 2005. The use of co-products such as DDGs are also very important to the growth of agriculture. DDGs are an excellent source of protein for cattle and other livestock, and have resulted in a significant growth in cattle feeding here in the Midwest. States, including Iowa, and the federal government are providing incentives for investment in renewable fuel infrastructure. USDA has some incentives. We have some state incentives. Growth in E15, E85, and blender pumps have helped achieve the important goals set by the RFS, and we are exploring how we might be able to expand those efforts via the recently announced USDA infrastructure initiative. Retailers in Iowa know the importance of biofuels to our state's economy and have installed blender pumps, which have resulted in higher octane and lower costs for ethanol blended fuels to consumers. And when the consumers have that choice, let me tell you, just like the guy I talked to in Lamoni, Iowa today, who was putting E85 in his pickup truck, just at the same time we were putting ours in, he was saying what a difference it's made and why he's able to get much lower cost fuel. When consumers have the choice, as they do in Iowa, they choose ethanol and biofuels. The oil companies are preventing some of those efforts in other parts of the country, and consumers are forced to pay much more for their fuel. In the past 18 months, there's been some encouraging studies and data that provide, I think, EPA with new information for why you ought to revise your proposal. I believe that EPA has an opportunity to refine your approach, including this data that shows there is more capacity to integrate biofuels into our nation's fuel supply, and data that shows that the RIN activity did not affect the price at the pump. You know, the baloney that came out in 2012 about food and fuel, I think, has been totally discredited, as the price of corn has dropped dramatically to less than half what it was. The price of food has gone up, not down. I look forward to hearing from fellow Midwesterners who embrace the choices at the pump and a robust renewable fuel standard. The EPA's decision will affect the lives of many people in my state of Iowa and throughout the entire Midwest, as well as consumers nationwide. I hope that the EPA shows Midwesterners that the federal government is not abandoning its commitment to a robust renewable fuel standard that can make such a difference and has made such a difference in revitalizing rural America. I am hand-delivering letters today from my Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds, from every member of our congressional delegation. And by the way, every single member of the Iowa General Assembly supported my recommendation for resolution supporting a robust renewable fuel standard. That is every Democrat, every Republican in the House and the Senate. They joined me in urging President Obama and Administrator McCarthy to alter the EPA proposal to support a more robust and effective RFS as the EPA has in the past. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm proud to be here, and I'm proud to be a strong voice for the renewable fuel standard. Don't mess with the RFS.
Thank you so much, Governor Branstad. Governor Nixon.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Good morning. I'm Jay Nixon, the governor of the Show Me State. I want to join Governor Branstad in thanking you for coming to the heartland. Once again, like him, he feels Iowa would have been better. I feel Missouri would have been better. And for those of you that know me pretty well, for me to go to Kansas, this is a big issue, okay? Now to our friends in Kansas, we thank you for your leadership also on these issues. This is really important for America. And thank you for hosting this, and I'll be quick. And I thank Governor Branstad not only for his lifelong leadership, but also his advocacy among fellow governors and other policy leaders in this country. There, quite frankly, is no better leader in these issues than Terry Branstad, and I tremendously appreciate your wise counsel and help to me as we move through these issues. Now, here in the heartland, and especially in my state of Missouri, agriculture is the backbone of our economy, and the proof is in the numbers. Missouri has more than 99,000 farms and 28.3 million acres of farmland. And agriculture directly employs more than 250,000 Missourians. We were talking just this morning with the rain we've had and the slowness to get in the field with a bunch of crops this year, what a dramatic effect that could have in some ways on the economy of our state this year, and we're concerned. We have more than $12 billion in sales each year, and as a state, we're very diverse in agriculture. We're in the top 10 in corn, soybeans, cattle, hogs, cotton, rice, poultry, horses, and, of course, number one in black walnuts. No need to have a renewable fuel standard for black walnuts. We're doing fine putting those in cakes, pies, and other sorts of treats. The men and women who have dedicated their lives to feeding, fueling, and clothing the world have made Missouri an agriculture powerhouse. and they continue to drive our state's economic growth, especially when it comes to corn. Last year, the 3.5 million acres of corn we planted in Missouri produced an economic value of more than $2.1 billion. Each year, about 30% of Missouri's corn crop is turned into about 300 million gallons of ethanol, a renewable domestic energy source that fuels vehicles worldwide. I, like Governor Branstad, remembers the days when policymakers were talking about these issues 5, 10, 15 years ago. And everyone running for office, as we were lamenting our reliance on foreign oil and foreign fuel, when asked what their position was on where we should go, said, "I'm for all of the above." And it was in that context of all of the above energy policy that the law was passed that we're talking about today. The law passed. Now, a recent report from the University of Missouri found that Missouri's ethanol industry alone accounted for about $1.1 billion in economic output for our state, including about 1,500 jobs. But agriculture isn't just an important industry. It's an important part of our way of life. So when you hurt agriculture, you hurt families. Also, when you ask agriculture to step up, and there's a lot of people in this room and a lot of people through the Midwest that 15 or 20 years were stepping up in big ways, making investments, whether it's the private sector investments that were made in the ethanol production or the individual farm families that bought those shares in those co-ops in Missouri before anything got paid back, before anybody was saying anything. They were the first in the front of the line to say, we are going to do our part in our communities to break us free from foreign oil and to keep us moving forward here. So when somebody say, what have you given in this, all of those folks across all of our states, Iowa, Missouri, the entire Midwest, our families, our farmers have not only started this, they have followed up. That's why we're committed to doing everything we can to keep Missouri farm families and rural communities moving forward. Unfortunately, as was said by my brethren from Iowa, I can't always say the same for what's done in Washington, D.C. or other parts of the country. The current proposal that we're dealing with here today continues to fail in significant ways to meet the renewable fuel targets that are part of the law. You know, just that simple. I mean, a law gets passed that says, here's the targets. And then regulations get passed or are promulgated that say, well, part of that's good enough. That's not the way we play, especially in agriculture. You don't stop plowing 80% through the field, okay? We don't stop working at 80% of what's necessary. That's why this law was passed. The Energy Policy Act of 2005, establishing renewable fuel standards, including specific volume requirements, was intended to stimulate investment in renewable fuels so that we could have cleaner air and be less reliant on foreign oil. And as I said before, we invested big time with risk. Not guarantees there. A lot of folks, as Governor Branstad said, I've been to many farms in my great state. I've been to many ethanol plants. We have a robust industry out there. And time after time after time, you saw those shares bought by those individual farmers because of, and you saw the infrastructure needs of those communities for the rail lines put in. There were significant investments. We all know the market targets of RFS act kind of as a ceiling in the market when it should be a floor. And so that's why this is so important, because you need that market out there. Everybody knows that. By setting RFS below the congressional targets, the EPA caps the amount that will be produced. I mean, that's what happens. I mean, we're here in the Midwest. We're going to talk very, very directly and very straightly. That's what happens. I'm not sure straightly is a word, but it's a great thing about being that was the one great thing about having – one of the things about having George Bush as president. You should never misunderestimate how useful his use of the English language was to some of us. So straightly, we talk straightly. Okay. It is counterintuitive for the agency that is charged with enforcing the clean air laws to impose a de facto limit on ethanol, a product which so clearly emits fewer greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. So the one agency that should be saying more is saying less. I mean, if you look at the mission of the agency, and that's what's so surprising in a way, because we certainly get a number of I'll be kind, but also troubling is the fact that the EPA uses reasoning with dubious authority in imposing these lower limits. There's obviously going to be decisions made about that. But the federal RFS allows a waiver only if the RFS would harm the economy or the environment. That's an important legal matter to remember here, okay? The RFS would, allows a waiver only if the RFS would harm the economy or environment. So they have a burden to prove. And quite frankly, I'm not seeing how it's going to hurt our economy to produce cheaper, better, cleaner fuel. And it's certainly not going to hurt our environment to produce here in America. Okay? Second thing, and I don't speak for Iowa, but Iowa speaks loud. The EPA gets the second standard is if there's an inadequate domestic supply. We have never failed to meet the requirements. We have never failed to deliver, ever. Every time I've asked the farmers of our state to deliver for America, they have been at the front of the line. And so talking about inadequate domestic supply is just false. It's just that simple. EPA's proposed rule imposes lower ethanol targets based on conditions outside of what Congress intended when it gave the EPA the limited waiver authority. Okay, this is a waiver from the law. Okay, that we're talking about. We're not talking about going out and having to pass a new law or having to get this House and the Senate and Congress and the President to sign. We got the law. We need it enforced. EPA does not have the expertise or authority to lower the targets based on their perceived infrastructure needs. Okay? That's up to us. We can't deliver, and we're working with USDA and others to make sure that we have that infrastructure. Or a belief that participants will not comply. That is a slap in the face to farmers, at least in my state. We'll comply. We'll meet the we will deliver. Not to mention the federal government made a commitment to our farmers, and our farmers have worked hard to meet that commitment by growing the corn needed to keep up with the ethanol demands. Breaking that commitment now would hurt our economy, our rural communities, and our environment. Using more ethanol and less gasoline reduces greenhouse gases, decreases our dependency on foreign oil, keeps gas prices low, and supports rural communities. I'll debate anybody anywhere in the world about that simple paragraph. Using more ethanol and less gasoline reduces greenhouse gases, decreases our dependency on foreign oil, keeps gas prices low, and supports rural communities. And quite frankly, everyone I've ever met in my life running for office has supported all four of those, okay? And everybody in office, okay? And this is, we're at that moment. We're at the cutting edge of what that really means right here. So we have made tremendous progress in the area of ethanol, and going backward is not an option. And I guarantee you that when you set the RFS targets where Congress has set them, our hardworking Missouri farmers and ethanol producers will hit that mark. I guarantee farmers and producers of the state of Missouri will hit the mark. I guarantee it. Where you set that mark up there. We're not asking you to do something prohibited by federal law. All we're asking is that you keep the commitments this country made to produce cleaner burning and renewable fuels. Because if we can keep that promise and keep this commitment to cleaner fuel, we'll keep this important industry going strong, our air clean, and our economy moving forward. As Governor of Missouri and Vice Chair of the Governor's Biofuel Coalition, I join my friend Governor Branstad in requesting that you align these RFS targets with those that Congress intended. I want to thank everyone that's here today for looking at this issue, and I want to thank everybody that's testifying. This outpouring of support here in the heartland is having a hearing about an agriculture matter during the middle of agriculture season and still having to double the size of it and to have more people than you have seats is a clear sign of how passionate that we feel about this important national issue. I believe that as you examine the facts of this matter, you will arrive at the same conclusion that I and other governors have. Breaking our commitment to rural communities is simply not an option. We must stay the course, keep our commitments, and work together to produce American-made ethanol, which will result in cleaner skies, a stronger economy, and a bright and more prosperous future for our farms, our families, and rural America. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be with you.
Thank you, Governor Nixon. We will keep the record open to allow Governor Brown back to comment on the venue.